to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Today's podcast is sponsored by Pavilion Payments, which empowers gaming institutions to create an enhanced patron experience with a complete suite of integrated payment solutions that enable safe, secure, and trusted cash access at the cage, on the casino floor, or online. Learn more at pavilionpayments.com. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB. This week we sit down with Art Pikowski, the president of the International Center for Responsible Gaming, on how the organization is truly expanding around the world and what it means for the RG sector. When Art Pikowski was named president of the National Center for Responsible Gaming, he joined at a period when the visibility of responsible gaming started to increase. And the National Center for Responsible Gaming became the international center, things really picked up. Pikowski discusses how the center has grown as he's been able to raise money from companies and organizations new to gaming via the sports betting and iGaming communities. He explains the process to apply for grants and some of the studies that are underway that will truly make a difference in the RG world. He spoke with me during the Indian Gaming Trade Show in Anaheim in April. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. My guest today is Art Pikowski, the president of the International Center for Responsible Gaming. Art, thanks for joining us. It's been a while, and I'm glad we could get together here at the Indian Gaming Trade Show.
Yes, thank you so much for inviting me, Roger. Really appreciate it. Always great seeing you.
Sure. Now, you've been leading the organization for, 2 years now?
It's 2.5.
2.5. Okay,
yes,
great.
2.5.
So we had a podcast when you first started, and you were telling me that part of your goals were to get some of the new companies that were involved in the industry, the sports betting companies, some of the online companies, certainly the suppliers. How have they responded to your appeals?
Well, the good news is I think the results speak for themselves, because we have had a 250% increase in our revenue at ICRG. And that didn't come from the small group of funders that we had when I started. So there's been a tremendous expansion in reach. We have significant presence now with sports betting companies. We have significant presence now outside the United States. And that to me is, you have to get out. You've got to pound the pavement. You've got to have meetings. And you've got to make your case. And I think we're doing tremendous work. We've been doing tremendous work for 25 years. The problem has been that we've been below the radar screen, and we really got hurt during COVID when we were even more below the radar screen. So I feel like we've ramped it up, and companies are responding.
Yeah, no, you've done a great job. You know, I've been following the then NCRJ through all its history. I've interviewed Dr. Schaefer several times, and it's a great organization. You do some great work, but you don't know how to blow your horn. But you've really really been able to do that.
Well, I appreciate your saying that. I mean, one of the, in addition to expanding our reach to other companies to bring them on board with financial support, we hired a marketing person. We're getting the word out there. We're in the social media spaces. I mean, we're doing the right things, and that's made a big difference. But I have to, I mean, this is something I boast about for us as an organization, being selected as Charity of the Year. At the ICE conference, I think really brought a lot of attention to us, and that kind of visibility you can't buy.
No, that's for sure. So as I said, I've been following this for a long time, and I know the conference is a very important part of the organization. I remember going to the first conference at George Washington University in the mid '90s, and just being totally floored, because I knew nothing of what they were talking about. It was all brain synapses and physiological things. That I had no experience in, and certainly not any education. But as we have gone forward, I've been able to understand more of what's happening. And I sat in on a few sessions at the at your conference right before G2E in October, and it seemed to be very successful. Give us some idea what came out of that conference.
Well, I think the people probably most associate our organization as a research organization, which probably, in fairness, is our number one function. But we also are very focused on education. And part of the education mandate for us is to do knowledge translation. Because if the only people that are going to understand what a research study says are people with a PhD, that's not going to be that useful. So we use the conferences. We use our webinars, which you may have sat in on. We do 5, 6, 7 webinars a year, trying to say, what does this mean, is the essence of it, to people who are in the field. So if a responsible gaming person at one of the big houses comes to a session we stimulate some thinking mm-hmm. by presenting data and information, then we can pull people together and say, okay, let's talk about what this means. How do we bring this to the casino floor?
Right.
How do
right.
we bring this online?
Exactly,
so
right.
those are the outcomes of the conferences that I think people get most excited about.
Sure. And like I said, I can understand most of the things now, which I didn't early on. But yeah, you bring it down to a level where you know you can really let the common person understand what's going on. At the same time, you know, the people who are really schooled in that discipline understand it as well.
Right. So we have a study that's getting rolled out very soon that I am really excited about because it's really the first significant work product mm-hmm. that we're presenting publicly since I started.
Okay.
And it's the large sports wagering behavior study. Mm-hmm. It's a 3-year study. Just to give you an idea of how meaningful this work is, mm-hmm. we already know it's going to be published in the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Okay.
This
yeah.
is
sure.
This is as high-end, prestigious mm-hmm. journal that you could possibly have. And so, yes, there's a market of people that will be interested in this that have a PhD, just
right.
as Josh Grubbs does, mm-hmm. who did the work.
Sure.
But at the same time, we're gonna put this in front of the media. We're gonna have, you know, the New York Times, hopefully, and the Wall Street Journal.
Sure.
Because this is big news, right?
Right.
And so we're gonna have to synthesize
right.
what we learned from that study so we can present it to the masses, so
right, right.
to everybody that has an interest.
Yeah. And I think the way you do your studies, peer-reviewed, things of that nature, you can't really deny it. Whereas some studies, I saw a study just last week, as a matter of fact, where it said, you know, sports bettors are more likely to be heavy drinkers, you know, and that didn't make any sense. And when you read the study, they really didn't go through that peer review process. But you have very strict standards when you give some grants out for research studies.
Oh, that... To me, integrity is everything.
Right, yeah.
And we don't compromise on
right.
integrity. And basically, you're exactly right. The firewall that was mm-hmm. created when the organization began 25
right.
years ago, basically the ICRD is responsible for raising the money,
mm-hmm.
and then the money goes to the other side of the firewall,
right.
to the scientific advisory
sure.
board, their peer review committees, they're all scientists.
Right.
None of those people can actually apply for grants
sure.
to maintain their independence.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tremendous process. And,
yeah.
and so we feel like if a funder funds a study, I'm the first one to say, we guarantee you it's going to be the highest quality work.
Right, right.
And that's what we should do.
Sure, absolutely. And the fact that, you know, the industry itself is funding the process, but they have no say in what happens, you know, on the other end of the, what comes out at the end of that pipeline.
That's totally right.
Right.
That's totally right. I think the more visionary leaders, and there are a lot of them in the industry, have come to understand that if the information is compromised,
mm-hmm.
it's not good.
Right, right.
It's not good.
Yeah.
They, I mean, people are at the highest levels are saying, I wanna know.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't know, you can't fix.
Sure.
Right? You can't address it. And so I think this is an evolution in thinking amongst, you know, industry CEOs
mm-hmm.
that's taken some time.
Sure.
But I think that if you wanted to be a denier or
right.
whatever you would want mm-hmm. to call it, I think what I've been saying is, look, there are facts here.
Right.
Okay, some people are adversely affected by gambling. That's proven.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
There's prevalent studies over 25 years bear that out. So let's help those people.
Sure.
Let's recognize that 93 or 94% of people don't have a gambling problem,
mm-hmm.
but for those that do, it's a real struggle.
Yeah, yeah, no question about that. And I think, you know, the vast, vast majority of operators who run casinos and sports books and the like don't want to appeal to those kind of people. They want those people to you know, walk away healthy. They don't want them to have a problem with gambling.
I think that's largely true. I mean, I think there are numbers of reasons for why people are coming on board on this.
Sure.
But you know, on the other side of that, there's tremendous reputational risk.
Right, sure, right.
You know, and God forbid something terrible happens to mm-hmm. somebody or worse to other people associated with that person. There's tremendous reputational risk and there's a lot of exposure.
Sure.
And so part of what I explain to people in the industry is that, is this a philanthropic decision? Yes,
mm-hmm.
but it's also a business decision.
Sure, right.
Do the right thing
yeah.
for all the right reasons,
yeah, no question.
Which is protect your industry. It's part of, it should be part of your sustainability package.
Right, exactly. So you mentioned the sports betting study, and that's taken over 2 years to come to fruition. Now, what are some of the other studies that are underway right now?
this is what probably more important than anything I'm going to say from my perspective. People commend me for the amount of money we're raising. Mm-hmm. It's an accelerated rate. Look, I looked at a statistic the other day because we finished our financials from 2023 and disseminated them to the board, and we had a 54% year-over-year growth in our revenue, which is unheard of in philanthropy.
Right. Sure.
Nobody's doing that. But it's especially unheard of when it's against minus 1.7%, which was the national average in 2023 for philanthropy. So, but the work product isn't the dollars. The work product is the research,
right? Sure.
And so we now have 30 unique studies underway simultaneously. Some of them are very brief, you know, more to write papers and things like that. So we have a lot of younger investigators that do those kind of projects, and then we show them off at our conference and things like that. But there are a lot of studies, two-year studies that are 180,000. There are three-year studies at 450,000 that are funded here. And they're in all the spaces that you read about in the media. You know, like, I'll give you a good example. There are a lot of jurisdictions that are banning advertising.
Right.
What's the data to support it?
Right.
If you say, what research has been done on this on Google, there's almost nothing there, right?
And it's people just getting mad at seeing so many ads up there, but you don't know about whether it's really harmful or not.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So the only way to get to that is to do research.
Right.
Sort of on a similar vein, we're doing a study now on messaging. What works? So if we're saying, if you have a problem, call this number, does that work?
Sure, right.
You know, so we're looking at the messaging that we're currently doing to evaluate and assess how effective it is. So that's one of the studies we're doing. But one of the things I would like to emphasize right now is that there are at-risk populations that we need to be keenly aware of. One of those is young adults. So right now we're doing four different studies targeting the young adult population.
Right.
So when you have seen a change in the industry where you had to get up, you had to get dressed, you had to get in your car, you had to drive to where all you have to do is pull this out.
Right, yeah, sure, right.
24/7.
Right, yeah.
Right. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we need to know, right? We need to do the research so that we understand better, and we know that the most proficient people on this device are younger adults.
Sure, right.
So we're focusing and channeling some of our energies in those areas where we sense that there's not a very significant amount of data to begin with, and where we could believe that there's inherent risk.
Right, right. Okay, great. So there's been a lot of attention paid to responsible gaming over the past year or two, and that can be good and bad, you know, because a lot of that is a reaction to some anecdotal evidence, not necessarily across the board. So this is the kind of research you want to do. So why do you think that this attention has really increased over the past couple of years?
That's a really good question, Roger. The interesting thing is that there's a cart and there's a horse, and sometimes the cart is ahead of the horse. Now, what I mean by that is that legislators and regulators will decide to do things because of the political environment around them.
Yeah.
And so if politics drives the decision and not data, a lot of crazy things are going on right now.
Right.
And there's, you know, because it impacts jurisdictions all over the world, something's going on in Bolivia, something's going on in England, something's going, everybody's doing their own thing, not necessarily supported by facts. So I believe that actually does a disservice.
Right.
It does a disservice to people who are problem gamblers.
Sure, right, right.
Because essentially you're making things up. Or, as you suggested before, you're relying on, a survey is not research. I'm sorry. If you follow somebody for 2 weeks, it's not research, right? So you have this gray literature around what people call studies or surveys that somewhat misinforms people.
Right.
So there's a lot of patience required when it comes to research, but it will pay off. And what I've been saying is when you start to see 2 or 3 years from now, 5, 6, 7 of these rolled out, that's gonna start to affect how people view the different things that need to be regulated and legislated on.
Right, right. Yeah, so we're waiting for those kind of studies to come
through. And in the meantime, but I guess I didn't address the core part of your question, which is important, is as a result of all of that, there is a lot more awareness around responsible gambling. And in fact, there should be, because you want to put a positive face on that we do care.
Right.
And that's part of the way you do it. And at ICE, for example, I was actually the chairman of the educational sessions. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was interesting was, you know, it used to be tucked away.
Right, sure.
Out here, like, yeah, where right. where are, you know. They put that front and center.
Mm-hmm.
You walked into N1, the first thing you saw, consumer protection zone.
Right. Yeah.
With seven or eight different organizations mm-hmm. represented and a whole series of, and at the sessions, I also was on a panel, there were way more people than chairs.
Right.
This is a big change, even from 2 years ago,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And I think, again, the awareness has really been raised, and I think particularly that we want to address this problem, want to make sure that these people aren't harmed any further than they are already. You know?
Right.
Okay. So there's a proposal out there to pass something called the GRIT Act, and I forget what GRIT stands for, but essentially it's to use the federal excise tax on sports betting revenue, which is 0.25%, and use that dedicate that money to responsible gaming. At the same time, the American Gaming Association and other organizations are trying to get that repealed because it really doesn't make any sense anymore. That I think that was passed in the mid-60s to kind of control illegal gambling. So where do you stand on that?
That was such a hot issue
right.
that we talked about at our last board meeting at some length. I think our position is the same as it's been for 25 years around the fact that we do think the federal government should support gambling research mm-hmm. and NIH should be involved with that.
Right.
And it hasn't been.
Right.
And when you look at the amount of money that's devoted to alcohol research, right. drug research, all kinds of other things, why not this? How? Right. What has to happen before you mm-hmm. wake up and smell the coffee, so
right.
to speak? So we've advocated for government support.
Mm-hmm.
But we also don't feel it's for us to decide where the money comes from.
Right, sure.
Right? And I have no idea. I haven't done to quantify it to determine what the percentage would actually produce.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other question, of course, is how is it going to be disseminated? How
right.
are the funds going to be
sure.
disseminated?
Right. Who yeah.
And this is, all you have to do is look at England right now
mm-hmm.
with their white paper.
Right, yeah.
It's just the discussions go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. The implementation is taking forever because
right.
I was asking those questions and most of the people I was talking to were like, I don't know.
Right.
Well, if you don't know, you're not ready.
Right. Exactly, right.
So I think it will be complicated. I don't even know if they try to go forward with it, whether it's mm-hmm. going to move.
Right.
A lot of people think it won't move anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we need to stay the course around the government needs to own this too.
Yeah.
The industry needs to own it and the government
sure.
needs to own it. It's unimaginable to be, if in fact those numbers change
mm-hmm.
and more people have a gambling problem
right.
and the majority of those people are younger,
mm-hmm.
that's a whole societal issue.
Sure. No
that's
question.
My nightmare.
Yeah, right.
And so what are you waiting for?
Right.
Let's get on it, is
yeah.
my point of view.
I mean, the last time the federal government did a study was during the National Gambling Impact Study Commission in the late 1990s, and that's where they found, you know, less than 2% of the people are really involved in serious problem gambling. And the fact that that study hasn't been done, you know, since then is kind of makes those numbers, especially with all the increase in gambling all around the country. Well, why can't we study that? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's actually kind of interesting because there have been numbers of prevalence studies that have been done since that one
yeah.
that ironically, no matter how the industry has expanded, mm-hmm. there are certainly more casinos now
right.
than there
sure,
were
right.
then,
right.
that the prevalence numbers have remained pretty much the same, but it's more people.
Yeah.
2% of 100 people
yeah.
is a lot less than 2% of 1,000
sure.
people.
Sure, right, yeah.
And so I try to say it's good news and bad news mm-hmm. because we know more people are gambling and more people, certainly as the phone becomes
sure.
easier to do it online, is it's still a significant societal risk.
Right. I remember one time I was interviewing an Australian problem gambling researcher, and he was saying, oh, the more slot machines, the more holes in the road you can fall into. I said, that doesn't sound right. You
know, yeah, so. No, it's that has never proven to be true.
No, exactly.
But
right.
but it is, as you were suggesting before, it is a brain function disorder.
Yeah.
It is
sure.
how, you know, our
right.
brains work differently. And that's why, you know, if I'm not going to read you 30 studies,
right.
but we do realize, like this one, disentangling incentive salience and reinforcement insensitivity after brain injury and rat gambling behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
Do you
right.
know you can teach a rat to gamble?
I didn't know that.
No, I didn't either, but I know
yeah.
it now.
Yeah.
But the point is, it's how, you know,
yeah.
how things shoot in your brain.
Sure, right.
And so we do research to understand that better, not just research on self-exclusion, and which we need to understand too.
Sure, absolutely.
It's a whole big package to understand this better.
One thing that they didn't study in the late 90s in that study was online gambling. And proponents of online gambling say because you can track every bet a player makes, you can be more effective in battling problem gambling. Do you buy that?
Well, I think there is. I've actually asked around about that myself.
Yeah.
And there is a truth to it because people that gamble at the casino, the only way to really recognize their gambling habits is if they use a player's card.
Right.
And a lot of players don't.
Sure, right.
They get the card, they don't use the card, they never get the card. So it's sort of an incomplete, those people that do, maybe you just do as who doesn't
sure,
could be
right,
a study,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Exactly, right.
Why does somebody use their card or not? But online, yeah, the tracking potential there is really good.
Yeah.
And so I know some people that are on the research side who are saying, getting good data is a big part of why it's difficult to do studies.
Sure, right.
You know? So I think there might be some advantage associated with what you've just suggested.
Sure, sure. Okay, great. So one of the things that has come out of ICRG studies is that a lot of gamblers, people who have gambling problems also have other addictive problems called comorbidity. And that makes it that much more difficult to treat this because do you just treat it for gambling or do you treat it for all addictions? Have we come to any conclusion on how that can be done successfully?
I think that's a big part of why we do other conferences. We do a conference every year in coordination with the Sandia tribe in New Mexico. And what we find is that the people that are actually providing service, they don't get a lot of training.
Right, sure, right.
So to provide them with the tools to better service their clients, because the people who come are the people in the field actually doing that direct service. So we recognize that that's a problem. Even getting continuing education credits. So basically, given the scope of the problem, there are relatively small people that are in the trenches dealing with that. But yeah, you, I think I'm a social worker by training, and most of us understand that we have to treat the individual in a holistic fashion.
Sure, right.
I could fix you here, and it doesn't mean you're well.
Right, sure, right.
Wellness is a whole package, right?
Right.
So I think that's a very important point. And it's not, by the way, it's not just, people will think alcohol.
Yeah.
There is a connection certainly between alcohol and gambling and that comorbidity, but it's also related to depression, anxiety.
Sure.
So those kind of issues also
can
create problems when somebody's gambling.
Well, again, those are the kind of brain synapse things that is involved in gambling problems.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay. Exactly.
Great. So there's so many organizations out there, alphabet letters and things of that nature. Like the ICRG for years was under the radar while some of the other organizations were out there. I was looking through, when you Google problem gambling, every state has a problem gambling center or something like that. So how do you pinpoint the benefits of ICRG and how do you work along with those other organizations?
Well, I would tell you that I wish the collaboration was better. I mean, I know a lot of people who are in those other spaces. But from my standpoint, one of the things that the board has agreed with is that there's not going to be any mission creep.
Right, yeah.
And we know what we're here to do.
Right.
And we're going to focus more on doing extraordinary work than anything else. So our mission is pretty simple.
Right.
We do research and we disseminate the findings.
Right.
Education is important, and the ultimate goal is prevention. So there needs to be other organizations that are providing direct service and things like that, because we're not going to do that.
Sure.
And
we're
never going to do that.
Yeah.
So I think if people really want to look into it and they say, well, what's the difference between NCPG and ICRG?
Right.
It would be pretty easy in about 5 minutes to understand the difference.
Yeah, right.
And so I don't consider them to be competitors.
No,
I respect.
Absolutely not.
I respect what they do. I think some of the newer organizations that are looking at AI and things like that as a tool to help people, go with God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, really, I hope you figure it out.
Yeah.
It's above my pay grade.
Right.
I wouldn't be able to contribute very much to that.
Sure, right.
But I do think there is differentiation, mm-hmm. and that's the important thing. And I have nothing bad to say about anybody else.
Sure. But it would be nice if there were more cooperation amongst all these organizations.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you do see it on, that's like planning committees for mm-hmm. conferences sometimes right. involve a diverse group of people mm-hmm. that don't just represent one organization. It's getting there, like yeah. a lot of things.
Sure.
It's right. getting
yeah,
there.
Yeah,
it's
no
getting
question.
Better, not worse.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So the I in ICRG is relatively recent,
right.
International rather than national, being recognized by ICE, I think last February was very important because it showed you had that international reach. How are you furthering that discussion with international groups?
Well, one of the, I mean, it's almost a little comical because I asked it in a mm-hmm. comic way, which is,
right.
what makes this the International Center of Responsible
right.
Gaming when I joined? And mm-hmm. everybody's like, so it's nice to change your name.
Sure.
But, but if it doesn't mean anything, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
So I said, okay, what would we need to do to be the International Center of Responsible Gaming? And basically, we focused on three things. One is outreach mm-hmm. to international companies.
Right.
And again, that falls into the category of typically my getting on an airplane and going somewhere mm-hmm. and seeking people out and having conversations
sure.
that hopefully lead to something. The second is we have international representation on our board.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Christina Romero, who's mm-hmm. in Spain. We have Brigida
right.
Sand, who's in Denmark. So it's
sure.
it's a start.
Yeah.
And the third thing, which was already being done that nobody talked about, see, even when I asked the question, they
right.
didn't say it, we are doing studies all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we just funded one of our largest studies in Sydney, Australia.
Okay.
We're doing a big study in Germany. So
okay.
I think those things really do speak to
right.
it. When, if you look at a list and you say, oh, there's Ohio State and there's Cambridge, oh, there's Canada,
yes.
You know, oh, there's Australia.
Sure.
The messaging here is that we're going with the best.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And if the best isn't in the United States, it's in Canada or Australia
right.
or Germany, we're gonna pick them.
Sure.
They're gonna get the award.
Yeah, I don't want to say name names because I'll forget somebody, but there are some very notable problem gambling researchers in Canada and Australia, you know, and
yes.
I'm sure in other countries that I've never even heard of, but it's great to be able to reach out to them and get them involved in
so
your work.
I think the irony is that it's the investigators
right.
made us international before we recognized ourselves
right.
as international.
Right. Okay.
So it's interesting, but yeah, I do feel now between our presence, as you said, at ICE and things like that, we are well known around the world. Maybe mm-hmm. would I like to be better well known in Asia?
Right.
Yeah, and
yeah.
I'm thinking about what to do about
sure.
that. Or in
right.
Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
It was very funny. I wanted to be on a panel at the Latin American conference mm-hmm. coming up in Miami.
Right.
So I figured, wow, Miami's nice.
Yeah.
It's a good time of year there.
Yeah.
My brother lives there. And then they said, well, the panels are in Spanish.
Yeah.
I said, that's kind of a no-go for me.
Right.
But, you know, yeah,
sure.
but I think about those things because
sure. yeah.
I'd like to know more people in the Latin American market
yeah.
and
yeah.
see if I can engage them around the work of ICRG.
Yeah, no question,
yeah.
no question. Well, you've been in office now for 2.5 years, and finally you're getting your first study out. So I guess you look pretty far ahead. So where would you like to see the ICRG in say, 5 years?
So it's interesting. I'm a high shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I'm in the stars, and
right.
and when I told people that my goal was to bring us to be a $5 million organization,
right.
we're at 1.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
Some people rolled their eyes and
yeah.
was like,
right.
"You're kidding, right?"
Yeah.
Well, we're at three and a half now.
Mm-hmm.
We're off to a very good start this
yeah.
year. I hope we get there.
Yeah.
But what that would mean is that this list
yeah.
of studies will be twice as thick.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Sure.
And at the end of the day, for me, I've been a nonprofit executive for mm-hmm. between 45 and 50 years.
Right.
It's my whole life's work, right? At the end of the day, yeah, this is ICRG's work mm-hmm. product, right?
Right.
This research. But the benefit, how many people do you need to help in some tangible way
sure.
for all of this effort that we put forward mm-hmm. to matter?
Right.
And that's the way I see it. It could be hundreds, it could be thousands, it could be hundreds of thousands
sure, sure.
that benefit from what we learn from this research.
Great.
And that's what gets me up in the morning.
Okay.
That's
great.
So 5 years from now, I think we'll make an indelible mark
mm-hmm.
on keeping people safer.
Okay. Well, one more question. I've been,
of course.
As you were talking there, I thought, if there's anybody out there who is a researcher and wants to put something forth to the ICRG to get funded, what's the process for that?
Well, we actually put a call out. Mm-hmm. That it's sort of like the process.
So you have a topic that you put out there and do a call for proposals?
No, well, it's that you just hit on. That's one. There are two ways.
Okay.
One way is that, as I said, let's say I work at an arrangement, a company says we're willing to make this kind of a gift, mm-hmm. and here's the menu
right.
of approved. They say, okay, we're interested in this. Mm-hmm. The other is we have called unrestricted funds. Mm-hmm. And so we would send out a call, and an investigator could come to us with their idea
okay.
for a study. Mm-hmm. We allocate a certain amount of money to that. Those are reviewed in the mm-hmm. same fashion.
Right.
And they could be in all different spaces, mm-hmm. and then those are selected.
Yeah.
So there is, I think that's very important because we don't want to limit the ideas only to those industry funders that we right. have. We want to make sure that we get the widest swath mm-hmm. of potential subjects and topics to study that sure. we possibly can. So I think that works really well.
Okay, great, great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us here at the Indian Gaming Trade Show. It's great to see you. And
thank you, Roger.
We'll do this again when that sports betting study comes out, because I'd like to hear more in depth and what some yeah. of the results are in that.
Yeah, I mean, I think in closing for me, first of all, I'm totally grateful that you would give me an opportunity to talk about ICRG 2.5 years
yeah,
later.
Sure.
Because,
right.
you know, it was great. You were one of the first ones that showed interest mm-hmm. in me and what we right. were doing. And so the questions you asked were focused on what goals that I had sure. set for the organization. But I think the only other thing that I would add is that it's not a one-man show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get a lot of credit. I get a lot of support.
Sure.
Trust me. I'm like every other human. Do
right.
I like hearing it?
Hug?
Yeah,
right.
I do. But we have tremendous leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody said to me yesterday, he said, you know what, I looked at your website and I looked at your board. That's a heck of a board.
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
Those are prestigious people, mm-hmm. well-known and respected. And beyond that, I have an advisory council
right.
of people who are at the highest levels
right.
in the industry. And so what I say is, it takes a village.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
sure.
yeah, I'm out there every day, here I am. I have a guy here who's on my advisory council that made a contact for me at one of the largest tribes, and mm-hmm. I'm meeting with them today.
Right.
I probably wouldn't be able to get in that door without him. So
sure.
there are a lot of people that are helping the ICRG mm-hmm. grow to where hopefully ultimately it will be in
sure.
5 years.
Yeah, great. Well, Art, you're doing a great job there, and I do want to continue to stay in touch because we've been a supporter of the organization from the start, and we want to continue to do that. So thanks for taking the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Roger. Appreciate it.
Hope you enjoyed today's GGB podcast, sponsored by Pavilion Payments. Learn more about the full suite of gaming solutions available at pavilionpayments.com. To learn more about the topics discussed today and all the important issues in gaming, check out Global Gaming Business Magazine. For a free virtual copy of the magazine, subscribe at ggbmagazine.com. To stay current with the weekly news of the gaming industry, subscribe to ggbnews.com. Use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. And don't miss a single episode of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on Amazon, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts today. And we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast.